You're listening to The National Interest on Radio National, Radio Australia, and or the World Wide Web. And in February 2003, Professor Rick Schein was here in The National Interest, speculating about what the invading cane toads might do to the native wildlife of the Northern Territory. Professor Schein was particularly concerned about the effect of the toad invasion on reptiles, and we talked about the possibility that snakes might evolve very quickly to become toad-resistant. Because if some snakes have an aversion to toads or have some natural biological resistance to toad poison, then they'll survive and they'll become the breeding base of a new super toad-resistant type of snake. And at the end of the conversation, I invited Rick Schein to come back in a couple of years to tell us how the evolutionary experiment has turned out. So here he is, Professor Rick Schein, Professor of Evolutionary Biology at the University of Sydney. Rick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Now, just to remind us again, when we were talking last time, we were talking about a specific site that you were paying attention to, Fog Dam. Remind us of what makes that special.
Well, I guess, I mean, it's a wonderful place, but more than anything, we know a great deal about it. One of the big problems in trying to understand what toads do is that we really need a place where we've got a very clear understanding of the ecology of the predators and so forth, so that when the toads come, we can see what difference they make. And the sad reality is that it's kind of difficult to get long-term ecological studies going because you've got to keep the funding going for a long time. And Fog Dam's really pretty unique. I started work there about 20 years ago. I've had a succession of people that have worked very hard, and we know really quite a lot about the place now.
I understood that what made it special was that it's positively seething with snakes.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons I picked it in the first place was that the snakes are extraordinarily abundant, at least at the right time of year if you look in the right place. You know, these tropical lowland floodplains are very rich places, and yes, you do get a fantastic diversity and abundance of wonderful animals, including all sorts of beautiful snakes.
You say beautiful snakes, but how many are harmless and how many are dangerous?
Well, it's actually the vast majority are harmless. It's one of these peculiar things about Australia that the southern half of the continent is dominated by the venomous snakes, but once you hit the tropics, you get lots of pythons and tree snakes and water snakes and so forth that aren't venomous at all. So it's actually not a terribly dangerous place to be.
Look, I think you're pulling our leg, because what about the death adders? You've been particularly interested in the effect of the toads on death adders.
Indeed, there are plenty of adders there, and I don't know anywhere where you can find so many. Yes, that's one of the species we're really interested in. There's a lot of anecdotal reports that when the toads first come through an area, you find death adders lying there dead with a toad in their mouth. And indeed, that's been happening up in Kakadu in the last year or so. So Ben Phillips has got a whole bunch of death adders out there with radio transmitters in an area that the toads have just got to, and we're holding our breath to see what happens. So far, only one of them has met a toad and met its end. The others all seem to be still sitting there happily wiggling their tails and hoping that frogs or something will come along.
I think there's a joke here, Rick. You know, how do you attach a transmitter to a death adder?
Very carefully.
Carefully, I would think.
We use the we anaesthetise them, gaseous anaesthesia, just like in a veterinary hospital. We put the transmitter inside the snake because it's pretty hard to attach anything to the outside of a snake without it being caught up in the grass. And we sew him up, pat him on the head, and off he goes. They handle it all very well.
Now, 2 years ago, when we were talking, a little over 2 years ago, the toads had not yet arrived at Fog Dam. Have they now arrived?
Yes, they've arrived this wet season. So the first toad sort of hopped across the road about 2 months ago. Greg Brown, who's based up there, was on hand, and Greg's been putting radio transmitters on the first arriving toads and tracking them as they've come sort of romping through our study area. The numbers are still not huge. I think the best Greg's ever found is half a dozen in a night, whereas if you go 50 kilometres away, you might be able to find 100. So that we're still right on the fringe of the invasion.
You say invasion. We talk about it as though it's a military invasion, as though there is a horrible front coming inexorably across the land and there is nothing that we can do about it. Is that what it's really like?
It's actually turned out to be remarkably like that. One of the things I've been really interested to know after talking about toads for so long is exactly what that first front looks like. You know, when toads first hit an area, is it that they they're just sort of increasing in numbers, they're breeding, they fill up an area and then they kind of ooze onto the next one? Or is it more the sort of popular version of a sort of an army of toads marching down the road? And it actually turns out to be the latter. You can drive down the Arnhem Highway towards the toad front, you don't see any toads at all, and then suddenly there's lots and lots of toads. They're all facing towards you and they're all hopping towards you. Our telemeted toads are often moving a kilometre in a night, and we had one that got away from us and was caught in Humpty Doo by a member of the general public that had moved 20 kilometres in a month. So for an animal with short, stumpy little legs, it's a pretty phenomenal rate of movement.
Not only that, for an animal one would think with a small brain, how do they know where they're going? I mean, what are they going towards? What attracts them?
Well, these guys appear to be heading straight for Darwin and the Western Australian border. It's very clear from their movement patterns that they're using the roads. So they're travelling along the highway. And indeed, we had one that hit the right-angle intersection where the Arnhem Highway hits the road that moves down to Fog Dam, and it took a 90-degree right turn and went hopping down the dam a couple of kilometres. So I think what it is that it's rather difficult to move through these floodplains. They've got thick vegetation, and if you're a toad in a hurry, the best thing in the world is that people are creating these roads, they're mowing the verges, and they're even creating nice little roadside ponds where you can breed as you go.
Well, Rick, when we were talking last time, we discussed the possibility that some snakes might develop an aversion to toads, and that would be their salvation. Now, are there any signs that that there are particular snakes that don't like the taste of toad?
Yes, and the guy who's really been doing most of this is a fellow called Ben Phillips, and Ben's been working with us at Sydney Uni for quite a while now. Ben has looked in detail at what happens to toads as a history of sort of as a function of how long toads have been in an area. And what he finds is that you find very definite changes both in the snakes and the toads. So, for example, in an area where the toads have been for quite a while, you'll certainly get a great reduction in the number of some of the snakes, but you'll also see changes in that the snakes will tend to have small heads relative to body size. That essentially constrains the maximum size of toad they can eat, so they really can't eat a toad that's big enough to kill them.
So this is really an observable evolutionary development.
Yeah, it's remarkably fast. I mean, you've got a 70-year history now with toads in Australia, and you can see really consistent patterns, particularly in a reduction in relative head size in the guys that are vulnerable to toads. Ben's also got some shifts in feeding behaviour, the red-bellied black snakes in areas along the Queensland coast. Where toads occur, those snakes are now quite rare, but the ones that are left don't want to eat toads. If you do give them a small dose of toad venom, they're much better able to deal with it than snakes from unexposed areas. So we're looking at simultaneous adaptations in the body shape of snakes, their feeding preferences, and their physiological ability to handle the poison.
And their ability to tell the difference between a small toad and a frog?
I think that's probably the most critical variable of all. I mean, my guess is the way that this is going to work is that predators are going to get better and better at recognising that that's not really a juicy frog, that's actually a particularly potentially deadly toad.
One other animal that you were concerned about was the goanna. Are there any signs that goannas are being seriously affected by toads?
Greg has found a couple of dead goannas beside our radio track toads. So even the first toads coming through the study area have managed to knock over some of the goannas. And there are reports from Kakadu that goanna numbers have plummeted dramatically. And I think they are probably the most likely animal to rapidly find toads and therefore to rapidly be killed. I mean, they're very active foragers and they're always wandering around and tongue-flicking the ground, and they're happy to dig things up and so forth. So yes, I think that the goannas are in big trouble. Again, given that most of these goanna species, however, have not gone extinct in the areas where toads occur, I'm optimistic that although the numbers will go down dramatically, they will also eventually come back up again as the goannas evolve to deal with the presence of toads.
In the national interest, I'm talking with Professor Rick Shine, who is Professor of Evolutionary Biology at the University of Sydney. Rick, last time when we were talking, you did say that there was one species of snake called the keelback that can lunch on toads without ill effect.
Indeed. The keelbacks are an unusual snake. They're a harmless snake, and they belong to a group that is very diverse in Asia. And it looks as if keelbacks and some of the other harmless Australian snakes probably evolved up there in Asia, where toads occur, and have invaded Australia themselves moderately recently. So they probably have a history of exposure to toads. Whatever the reason, keelbacks are very good at dealing with toads. They do get a bit slowed down and so forth, but they can certainly eat very large toads relative to their own size without any great problem.
They're not a possible biological control mechanism.
I think they're certainly going to reduce the number of toads in an area. I think calling them a biological control might be getting a tad optimistic. I mean, there are quite a few native predators that can eat toads. Some of the freshwater turtles do it. There's records of some saltwater crocodiles chomping on them. Some of the little yabbies and crayfish. There's lots of stories of birds flipping toads over. And you'd expect that as evolutionary time progresses, there'll be strong selection on some of these predators to work out how to handle toads. So, again, I think we will move towards some kind of a balance. I'd be really surprised if toads disappear from the system, but we'd have to hope that they may become less of an issue through time.
What about some of the other animals in the area that there has been concern for their survival? Quolls, for instance.
Yes, I think there are some predators that we really have legitimate serious concerns about. The northern quolls, these sort of marsupial cats, seem to be incredibly vulnerable to toads. There are still quolls in northern Queensland, but mostly in high elevation areas where the toads don't get to. So there's no areas like that across through the Territory and the Kimberley, and the quolls really may be in big trouble. In the local area we're in, also, I fear for the King Brown snakes and the Western Browns. Ben's work is showing that they're very vulnerable to toxin, and they're pretty slow learners. They really can't tell the difference between a toad and a frog. And so there are a number of predator species that may be at very substantial risk.
Mm. Rick, when we talk about the toads, and particularly as they've been advancing on the Northern Territory, there has been a tendency to despondency and despair that they're coming and there's nothing that can be done about it. Is that true? Are they really invincible?
Oh, I doubt that any living thing is totally invincible. They're pretty damned impressive. I'm sure that we can reduce local densities of toads. And, you know, there's a lot of interest, for example, around Darwin in toad traps and the like. And I'm sure that, you know, we can take a lot of toads out of the system. But a female toad lays about 40,000 eggs every time she breeds. And so the sheer numbers are phenomenal. And the poison is such that it's very difficult for predators to really have a big effect on everything from eggs and tadpoles onwards. My guess is that any eradication of the toad is extraordinarily unlikely, but that the more we learn about what impact they have, I mean, I guess I'm coming to a slightly less negative view. I think there are some predators, particularly quolls and the like, that are in real danger. And that they will have an overall depressive effect on the numbers of insects and the amount of food for the frogs and so on. But I don't think it's quite the ecological catastrophe that I would have guessed it would be a year ago.
Mm. I suppose we should also say that on the matter of quolls, that some steps are being taken to preserve breeding populations on islands that are toad-free.
Yes, both the Northern Territory and Western Australia, I think, are thinking long and hard about what they can do. And one of the things that the Territory has already done is to move quolls onto some of the small islands. It remains to be seen whether those islands can support the quolls. I guess if you were a deep green environmentalist, you'd be concerned that perhaps those islands contain all sorts of endemic species we don't even know about yet that the quolls could have a nasty impact on. So it's a difficult set of decisions that the managers have to make, but there's been a remarkable renewal of interest in toads. I mean, people pretty much forgot about them as they moved across the Gulf of Carpentaria, but as they hit Kakadu and got close to Darwin and the Kimberley, suddenly lots of folks are beginning to put a lot of effort into exactly what should we do.
Mm. Rick, thanks very much for talking to us again. We'll check with you again in a couple of years' time.
Look forward forward to it.
Rick Shine, who is Professor of Evolutionary Biology at the University of Sydney.